For members only, Golf Smarter number 445, published on July 15, 2014.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Mistake-free golf with sports psychologist to the pros, Dr. Bob Winters.
This is Golf Smarter.
Welcome back to Golf Smarter for members only, Dr. Bob.
Fred, you know, it's great to be with you.
Thank you so much. It has been a long time since you've been on the podcast. I was going back in the files, and for those who don't remember or haven't had a chance to hear you before, go back to the first time you were on, episode number 39, The 10 Commandments of Mind Power Golf, and then on episode number 151, Mental Coach for David Ledbetter Golf Academy at the time, and now we talk about your brand new book, Mistake-Free Golf.
Well, I'll tell you what, it kind of takes me back a little bit, and it's funny that you say that because, you know, a lot of water has crossed under the bridge since the last time we talked, and I had, a young sports psychologist came up to me the other day, and it was kind of funny, and it sort of dates me a little bit, and he said, Dr. Winters, I've seen you on the Golf Channel, and I heard you on, Golf Smarter podcast, and they were talking about all the things I've done. They said, I really want to thank you for being one of the pioneers in the sport, and it sort of took me back a little bit, Fred. I'm saying, pioneers in the sport? He goes, yeah, you're like one of the first people out there. And that sort of made me, reflect that I've been in this, business for a long time, and I've done a lot of great things, met a lot of great people, such as you, and getting a chance to give back, to golfers, really what I've enjoyed over the last 45 years, playing golf at every level and doing what I do. So it's always great to be back.
Oh, thank you. So what is going on now? Where are you this summer? What are you doing? And where can we find you other than drbobwinters.com?
Well, I'm pretty much, traveling all over, but I am, stationed and based in Orlando, Florida. I am the resident sports psychologist for, David Ledbetter at his Ledbetter Golf Academy World Teaching Headquarters at Champions Gate, Florida. I also, travel, the tour at different events. And I have a lot of great collegiate amateur players and tour players all over the globe. But, people have found me, watching, the Golf Channel. They, go into, the website, and they actually Google me and contact me. And so, we're all over. Plus, I'm right now speaking to you from my Nike Golf Schools, where I've been affiliated with them for about 24 years. Mm. And I'm up here in the Berkshire Mountains right now for 5 weeks. And this is sort of really started about 21 years ago doing these Nike Golf Schools. And as, I've always told people, I love to give back to the junior golfers because the junior golfers are our future. And every year I come back, and this is sort of the fountain of youth for me, the Ponce de Leon up here in the Williams College, up here in Williamstown, Massachusetts, beautifully located in the Berkshire Mountains up here in western Massachusetts. And so I get to see these beautiful young golfers, ages 12 to 17, and they have this sense of innocence, this sense of naivete, this enthusiasm, and I always love to get re-energized and kind of, get an inoculation, get another shot, of that great stuff that they have, because it seems like golf, because it's such a brutal and emotionally tough game, it sort of, kind of wears us down. It kind of, scars us up a little bit. So it's nice to get some, fresh thoughts, some fresh blood, and some fresh ideas going. And plus, it's a nice way for me to actually introduce my theories, my philosophies to junior golfers and see what their impressions are. And we can actually start, talking about a lot of new creations and new intervention strategies. So they're a great audience to introduce it to, and then I take it out on the tours and then we're having a blast with it up here.
Very cool. Very cool. When you say their naivete, how is it that some of these young players, like we had an 11-year-old girl on the at the U.S. Open, right, for the PGA, the LPGA U.S. Open.
Yes.
How is it that these kids, and there's so many young people that are getting onto the upper level, the top level of golf competition. What is it about their naivete that gets them there? Or is it because of their naivete that allows them to compete at that level and not feel the pressure? Or let me ask it a different way. Do they feel the pressure that somebody with experience feels?
Well, I think you have to understand really where fear comes from. And fear sort of resides in the past. And I think, you know, when you have a young person, perhaps they don't have that many learned fear experiences. So they really don't have a backlog of negative memories. They sort of have sort of a fresh slate. So when you have, I believe her name was Lucy Lee, who comes in as an 11-year-old, and I love, you know, that she's shooting 77-78 in the U.S. Women's Open at Pinehurst number 2 when they had the golf course really set up. And at her post-round interview, there she is, you know, being an 11-year-old, dripping ice cream over her golf shoes and saying, well, my whole goal was to go out and have some fun. So, I mean, as far as her expectations weren't of shooting the lowest score or winning the U.S. Women's Open. Her expectation was more of a task or focus expectation, that she expected to go out and have fun. She expected to go out and test her talent. You know, she expected to go out and beat the golf course and let the chips fall where they may. And that sort of perspective is really what I'm trying to do with the best players in the world, because what happens a lot of times, you know, you hear a lot of huff and puff. You hear a lot of talk around the locker rooms and, oh, this is going to happen, and Q school is so tough, and it's just hell week, and you got to get through it. And you hear these war stories, and it starts to make you a little bit more fragile as far as your psyche. So you've kind of got to let that stuff go, and it's refreshing when you see these young minds. And the naivete is, instead of saying why am I why am I not succeeding, the young mind is saying, well, why not? Why not me? And let's just go out and go play. And I think, Fred, this is a huge thing when we start getting people going to Q school for the PGA and the LPGA tours, or European, Korean, or Japanese tour, wherever I'm working with them. And it seems to me like the very first time that a player goes out and goes to Q school, they really don't know what to expect. So what we try to do is get them into task expectations. Expect that you're going to give a great effort into every shot. Expect that you're going to have some fun. Expect that it will be challenging. Because what happens as time goes on, you find that a lot of people who don't do well at Q school or don't do well at qualifying for U.S. Open, U.S. amateur events, they almost find ways to sabotage. Well, you know, I failed before, and this is the reason why. And instead of actually learning from those failures, they start to create this backlog of negative memories, and they keep, you know, replaying those tapes over and over in their mind. And it seems like sometimes that the first time we do anything, you know, we do it pretty well because we don't have that buildup of fear or bad experiences.
I'm a little bit stunned here. Now, you know that with a name like Golf Smarter, that the golf psychology, the mental part of the game is a huge part of our content. I talk to a lot of different people who focus on helping people with their mental game. And you just talked about expectations. And that means focusing on outcome, doesn't it? And isn't that a no-no?
Well, you know, you have to also take a look at that. Is that part of goals, goal setting, aspirations, expectations? Because an expectation is a preset standard of really how you think something should happen in the future. And so when you talk about expectations, there's a lot of negative expectations, Fred, that golfers have. And the expectations that most golfers have, I think what I call the 99 percenters, they're always focusing everything around the results. They're focusing everything around the score. They focus everything around, you know, their reputation, how they're going to look, you know, whether they win, you know. And so it's a very much an outcome-focused expectation about something that they may or may not do in the future. So when I talk about expectations and what's the best type of expectation to have, it's a task expectancy. That is, in this moment, you know, I expect you to be totally committed to this shot. At this moment, I expect you to have a great decision. I expect you to conduct yourself in a manner that says, I know what I need to do with this shot, and I'm going to stay in this moment and do the very best I can. And I'll let you know the results speak for themselves. And I also expect at the end of this shot, I will accept whatever result I have, because the result, it is what it is. And so when we start talking about those type of expectancies, we're talking about an expectation that's going to happen in the immediate future, or what we call, you know, the upcoming present. So that's really, you know, kind of the difference there. One is a very far futuristic expectation, and the other is an expectancy about what you're going to do with the shot in front of you right now.
And are those the basic premises of, or is that the basic premise of your philosophy, your teaching philosophy?
Well, you know, my teaching philosophy is this, Fred, is that anything's possible. You know, like the PGA Tour logo and banner is anything's possible. You know, I never say never to any of my students. And what I want them to, you know, to feel and to believe in the philosophy we're working on is that it's about you, your ball, and the target. And that's in your zone of control. So when you go out and play, I want you to feel like you can play anywhere, anytime, with anybody, under any conditions. Mm. And when you have that sort of a personal playing philosophy, it's a mission statement that allows you to go out and play to your talent. And it doesn't matter who you're playing with, because what happens, most golfers start looking around. They start, you know, thinking these questioning thoughts like, who's watching me? What do they think about me? Will I be able, you know, to measure up? And really, if you are totally taking care of yourself in the moment and being right here in the moment, you don't have to worry about anybody else, because it is the most intimate relationship you have in golf, and that is with you, your thoughts, and your golf ball, and the target. And when you do that, I mean, you are in the precious present, and that is the gift of the present moment, and that's what you give yourself.
Let's get into your book. I'm very excited about the new book called Mistake-Free Golf, First Aid for Your Golfing Brain. Very good title. I like it. It really tells a lot. Let's break it down. Let's hear a lot about it, please.
Well, you know, Mistake-Free Golf, you know, I have a lot of people say, well, where did that idea come from? Well, even after I had written, you know, my other books, The Mental Art of Putting, Using Your Mind to Putt Your Best, The Ten Commandments of Mind Power Golf, and doing the Putting Genius, you know, DVDs, and writing, you know, golf fitness books, and all of these other things I've done, I took a look and I said, most of the sports psychology books that we have, I mean, even starting, you know, with the early ones, they were always talking about these platitudes, these positivisms, these trite cliche expressions about be the ball, be in the moment, stay in the present moment. And even though I use these terms, what I really wanted to do was I wanted to elaborate, and I wanted to have, you know, the reader say, this is really what it means when you say, I want to play one shot at a time. Because as you know, Fred, if you go out and play with your guys and you say, hey, you just need to trust your swing. Mm-hmm. I think when people hear that, they go, yada, 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 trust your swing, blah, 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 be in the moment. They don't know really what those things are. So when I had written Mistake-Free Golf, I went around starting in 2006, and I went and asked the very best players in the world a very simple question. I even went to the most emotionally challenged, the worst players that were playing at a high level, and asking them what, you know, they were thinking about and what was their greatest mental mistake that they committed during their careers. And just by asking that very simple question, almost to a man, woman, boy, or girl who I asked it, I got, you know, an immediate response. It wasn't like something I had to contemplate. They said, well, you know, my biggest mental mistake is I just get ahead of myself. Or, you know, I worry about what other people think about me. Or I just have too many thoughts in my head. So what I did, I just started, you know, collecting all these very, you know, one-on-one interviews. And they were just based on one simple question, and going around to the best players in the world And so I started picking up all this unbelievable information, all this great data. And so I put it into a lot of different components, you know, titles, and I broke it down into 9 very basic mental mistakes that almost all golfers make. And mistake-free golf, first aid for your golfing brain, is really, I think, the very first book and the only book that really takes a look at the mental mistakes that golfers make. And it gets away from the platitudes of positivity, and it says, okay, you know, if you're bleeding, right, and you're having a mental breakdown on the golf course, we need to apply a mental tourniquet now. We don't need, you know, get back to the driving range and go see our guru here later and kind of sit on the couch for 2 hours. You need something right now to stop the bleeding. So that's why I call it first aid for your golfing brain. So really what I take a look at the, you know, the 9 most common mental mistakes and give very specific descriptions of what those mental mistakes are. And then I give specific strategies and interventions. Here's how to alleviate, here's how to stop, and here's how to prevent those mental mistakes from happening again. Because as I say in the book, in one of my chapters, no one is immune from making mistakes. What I'm trying to do is get golfers to stop making all of these errors of omission, the errors of carelessness, the errors of misjudgment, miscalculation. And if we could actually just minimize a few mental errors each day on the golf course, you will start to play more consistently and more confidently. So that's really what mistake-free golf is really all about.
And isn't successful golf all about playing with confidence?
Well, it is about playing with confidence, but more than confidence, because everybody wants to talk about playing with confidence. Let's understand really what confidence is. Confidence is at one end of the spectrum. The other side of the spectrum is doubt. It's worry. It's anxiety. So everyone wants to play with confidence because why? Because it's the absence of doubt. And so I'm really, you know, trying to get away so much from playing, you know, having players play with confidence. I want you to play with a focus for execution. Because if you focus on executing the right things at the right time, you will have success, Fred. And when you start to have success, it creates a momentum of more success. And then you have more and more success. And then the residue at the end of the round, after you've had all these many successes, the residue you have is something that we call enduring confidence. Because what I call the 99%ers versus the 1%ers, the people that I work with, the 99%ers have something I call conditional confidence. And it's a false or spurious confidence. It's a pseudo confidence. And conditional confidence says, well, if I start off great, I'll feel confident then. If I make that first 3-footer, boy, okay, everything's good now. If I hit that first drive off the opening tee in front of that gallery, okay, I'm good for the day. But I always say, okay, that's okay, everybody understands that. But what happens when you start off, you know, for the first day and you go bogey, bogey, double bogey? You know, I mean, do they stick a fork in you and put you on the Barbie? or do you sort of rebound? And really, if you were psychologically hardy and you're mentally strong and you have what I call true confidence and you focus on executing your game plan, you actually get through that bad stuff and you persevere, and through a determined spirit and a disciplined mind, you actually start to play and your talent starts to come out. In fact, this just happened. I was talking to one of my players last night, and he was doing U.S. amateur qualifying, and he's leading, you know, after the first round of the 36-hole qualifying. And he said he started off bogey, bogey, bogey. He then proceeded, you know, to do nothing different, just stayed in the moment, continued to get to the next shot, and played the shot in front of him, and he birdied 4 of the next 5 holes. So it's sort of that consistency, and it's discipline. And that's really what mental training, mental skills training is all about. You could sit here and talk until the cows come in from the fields, Fred, about you just got to be positive, you got to do breathing exercise, sing a happy tune. I don't tell people this. And I think people that tell this, I don't know really why they're telling them this other than if it makes them feel good. The point is people need specific strategies. They need something right now that works, that's effective. And they need to also be aware of what they're doing, you know, when they're doing things well. And they also need to be aware of what they're doing when they're not doing it so well.
Yeah, it's interesting. Dave Stockton was on the show a number of episodes back, and he talked about looking at the clouds in between holes. It's like, why would you? What? He says, just look at the clouds. I'm like, why? And he says, so you don't have to, you know, beat yourself up on what's about to happen next. You just get your mind out of it for the moment and just think of something else, and then get yourself back into it.
Well, I've heard all sorts of different things that
sure.
people do. I mean, they're counting the number of steps in between the shot. They're counting the number of leaves on a tree or the number of leaves that are on the ground. And I'm sitting here going, wow, I mean, you are using a lot of energy because that's the whole point about having, you know, what we call a mental trigger, a trigger to get you into this next shot. And the time between a shot from your last shot to your upcoming shot, that should be a time where you're sort of mentally, you know, being reinvigorated, that you're sort of, it's sort of a mental timeout.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of like,
or
you know,
what we like to call a mental mulligan.
Yeah, a mental mulligan, but yeah, a mental timeout, Fred, is just, hey, okay, I don't have to think about golf right now. And really what Dave Stockton was probably alluding to was something that Walter Hagen and all the older players used to say, hey, you know, just, you know, take a great walk, smell the flowers, and realize that nobody's getting out of here alive in the first place, so you might as well enjoy your time on the golf course. So those are some things that, you know, we need to kind of really, you know, take a look at. But I really want, you know, the listeners to understand that, you know, we make all sorts of mistakes. I mean, that's really what mistake-free golf is. It's a great, catchy title because it really does grab your attention. If I could play mistake-free, but, I mean, no one's immune from making mistakes. But I'm talking about, if you understand what a mistake is, it's an error. It's an error in movement, an error in calculation, or it's an error in judgment. And it's caused by sometimes just being lazy, carelessness, or there's insufficient knowledge, or you have a misconception of what's going on. And so when we talk about errors, you have physical errors, you have mental errors, you have emotional errors, and you even have sensory errors, meaning you didn't really see, you know, the proper break, and you made a mistake, and you actually played it, you know, too far left, and it just didn't, you know, break that much. Now, that's a sensory error, which is a much tougher error to detect, but an error, you know, like I talk about, you know, in chapter number 2, I hit the ball when I know I'm not ready. I mean, that right there is a heinous error that so many golfers make, Fred.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they step into the ball, they have full commitment, they're ready to go, but all of a sudden a little, you know, puff of wind, you know, kind of blows into their ear. You know, they think they might need a little bit more club. And they know they should back off. They know they're not totally ready, but they go ahead and hit it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny how many people make that error. And what I really want to say in mistake-free golf is that anyone who goes out and buys it will realize right away that the best players in the world make the same mistakes that all recreational golfers make. They just don't make them as often. And when they do make them, it's for a lot more money and maybe for a title, and it's much more publicized. But they do make the same mistakes. And they have learned through the years to not make these mistakes, because if they continued to make these same mistakes, they wouldn't be on tour very long.
What did you mean before when you said errors of omission?
Errors of omission. Just, you know, not really knowing, you know, where the trouble is. Just, you know, errors of just lack of understanding. I mean, so, you know, an error of omission, there, you know, there's many different errors of omission we can make in golf. But you have errors of commission. That is, you knowingly made a mistake. You made a bad swing. But when I say errors of omission, it's like not really knowing what you did. Because, Fred, most players come in to me and they say, Dr. Winters, I know what it is that I'm supposed to be doing. I'm just not doing what it is that I know. And I have to ask them, well, if you really know, you know, what you need to be doing, then don't you think it would be a good thing to be, you know, continuing to do that? And why aren't you doing it? And they'll look at me and they'll say, I don't know. That's why I'm coming to see you. And then I ask, they talk to them. I said, well, there's several reasons. He said, because one is, maybe you really don't know what it is that you're doing. Maybe you think you do. but maybe it's a blind spot. Maybe you're not being aware of it. Or you may be careless, or you may be just a mistake or just a sloth. But there are so many errors that we can make, Fred. And what I'm trying to talk about in this book, in the Mistake-Free Golf, you know, book, this is like a training manual. And I've had, you know, people say that this is the most complete, absolute book that they have read that says this really gets to the meat and potatoes of everything we wanted to know about golf psychology. And I love one of my friends, Michael Doctor, who was the 2013 PGA Golf Club Professional of the Year. He said that this is a must read. He said he's seen everything and he reads everything out there. He said this is a five-star, and he said this is what every junior golfer, every parent of every junior golfer, and every aspiring tour player should be reading. And so that to me was a five-star testimonial. And you know, David Ledbetter and so many other people have read it, and they go, this is sort of your magnum opus. This is something, you know, that you should be very proud of. And I had, you know, some people just asked me the other day. They said, when did you start writing this? And I said, well, I started collecting the interviews and just started talking to people back in 2006. And then I really completed it a couple years ago. And St. Martin's Press of Macmillan Books said, we love this manuscript. We want to publish it. But it took me almost all my life to kind of figure out, Fred, all the different things, how we could actually make these strategies and interventions to help people get through these mental mistakes. So it's like everything else. It's like any great artist or musician or even golfer. It takes a long time to really understand what it is about these descriptors so you can provide an accurate prescription for success.
Yeah. Well, I'm, you know, this is the ninth year that I've been doing these interviews consecutively, like every week. And to me, it's such a lesson. And I continue to learn more stuff that I'm blown away. It's like, never thought of it that way. That's wonderful. It's there's so much to know. When we're talking about momentum, like when somebody I'm playing with double bogeys the first hole with a three putt, they're like, oh my God, today's going to be awful. My comment is generally, yeah, well, you got that out of the way. Now that you're done with that, let's, you know, move on and forget about it, you know? But there's that momentum factor that you were talking about earlier. And it seems like the momentum, the positive momentum forward as things get better and you start getting into a groove, that's a much slower climb than the momentum when things start to fall apart and everything rapidly goes downhill. How do you balance that and stabilize that?
Well, it's funny. I'm going to, you know, bring back a story that just happened last week, Fred. And since you and I are just having this great conversation, I had, you know, junior golfers. And we went to sort of like a wonderful little bowling alley, and it had all the video games, and you could actually get a video game, and you get, you know, sort of, you know, all the tickets, you know, you go like to Chuck E. Cheese and those places where you get all the tickets, and you can go in and have your kids, you get it. Well, I had some junior golfers hit, like a little water balloon, that had invisible ink onto one of my, you know, young LPGA teaching professionals. And they did it as a joke, and they took it in good stride. But I'm sitting here, and I'm looking at this, and here, you know, the LPGA teaching professional had, like, a white blouse on, and there was a huge, big thing.
Oh, you didn't say it was a woman.
Blue ink. Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, blue ink.
Oh, no.
And I'm, you know, and it was sitting here, I'm going, oh, my goodness. Now, what happened? And I'm sitting here going, well, you know, junior golfers, hey, kids are kids. You know, and we all laughed about it. And, you know, the teaching professional said, my goodness, what's going on? I can't, this is a brand new blouse. And they were talking about after about 10 minutes, it all faded away. And so I started thinking about this as you were, you know, posing that question, is that you have invisible ink that it shows up for a while and it dissolves, or you have what we call indelible ink that leaves its mark, that, you know, it's sort of like, that's the difference between great players and the wannabes. The wannabes get hit with that ink, and it isn't a disappearing, dissolving, invisible ink. It becomes an indelible ink. It becomes an ink stain. They think they've damaged the round, and it stays with them. And all they can do is look at the stain and they never get through it. And it was interesting. I mean, that's kind of an analogy for really what we do, because that's really what acceptance is all about. Acceptance, and I'm trying to explain this to all of my tour players and all of my players, whether collegiate or junior players, amateur players. Acceptance is really a neutral, objective term. When you accept the result of something that has happened, say that you have a player that's double bogey the first hole, and now they start going into the personal pity party. Why? And what happens is that you really have to, you know, be able to accept that and let that go. There's acceptance and then there's release. But what I'm trying to explain to people is that acceptance is not a passive, weak term. Acceptance is a very warrior-like, peaceful warrior-like term, because you come to grips with the reality. It is what it is. You don't have to like, you know, that you just double bogeyed the first hole. And you could have a little bit, you know, of emotion, a little bit of what we call that arousal drive, that sort of kind of kick it into a different gear. Okay, let's get through this. You don't have to like it, but you must accept it. If there's one must-ism in golf, you must accept, because it is what it is, because it will be unchanging. It's history. It's a done deal. The last hole, whatever you made, is Ben Franklin, Thomas Jefferson. It's history. It's a done deal. You need to put it behind you and move on. And when you accept and you release, you now have closure on that event, and you can now move into the new shot, re-energized, reinvigorated, and ready to play with confidence and ready to play, you know, with new enthusiasm for the upcoming shots. And that's really what the dissolving, the invisible ink. You dismiss it. You dissolve. You get it, you know, through you. You move through it. But when you have the indelible ink, when you stain yourself, when you do not accept, you take that stain, that trash, and you take it and you stain the next shot and the next shot. And before long, you know, your round is trash.
And you have to throw away the shirt.
And that's what we talk about.
Yeah, you have to throw away the shirt, because the ink will not go away. The concept of the invisible ink versus indelible ink just drew me immediately to the fact that that's why we use pencils on our scorecards. Right?
Yeah.
With erasers
and
on
always,
them.
And you always have to watch the golfers that have the pencils with the erasers at the top, I'll tell you, you know. But no, we don't play with those type of people. So those people, you know, that's a game of management, you know. So those are the people, what I call the 99%ers. They're so worried about score, because that's really what happens.
Right.
I mean, when players come in, and one of my chapters is chapter 5, I care so much about score, results, and my reputation. And I always talk about that, is that the first thing people ask you when you come in from a round of golf, Fred, it isn't, hey, did you really stay emotionally invested in every shot? Did you commit to your routine on every shot? They don't ask that.
No.
The 99%ers ask, what did you shoot?
Yep.
What'd you shoot?
Yep.
You know, or even if they say, well, how did you play? And Fred Green gives them an answer like, well, I'll tell you what, I hit 12 out of 14 fairways. I hit 15 out of 18 green. They go, no, I don't want to hear that stuff.
Yeah.
I want to hear, you know, what you shot. And the only reason they ask Fred Green that is they don't care about Fred Green.
Right. They want to compare it to themselves, right?
Absolutely. It's about comparing.
Yeah.
And so that's why when we talk about golf, you have an objective score, and then you have sort of a subjective interpretation of that score. And it's so important that, you know, young players learn that you are not your score. Your self-image, your golf esteem, your golf confidence isn't just wrapped up in your score. And, you know, because there's a lot of things that, you know, you have to be able to pull out of a round where you didn't score well, but you did some things really well subjectively. And that's really what we have to kind of focus on. And that's really what I'm talking about here in Mistake-Free Golf. And I'm just going to go down, you know, these different chapters, Fred. So
well, that's great, that because you know what? I was about to bring up Chapter 5. And when you said it,
okay.
I wanted to bring it up, because I got an email recently from from a listener in Australia who is talking about how he's trying really hard to not focus on the scorecard, not to look at where he is in his round until at the end. And he plays with people who are all the time going, all right, I'm one up. Okay, I'm, you know, we're even and we're two and now down, you know. And he's like, stop it. And he says, how do I get these people to stop reminding me what the score is? If they want to do it, that's fine, but I don't. How do I keep them from getting in my face on that?
Well, I mean, that's the big thing because, you know, most golfers really aren't playing golf. They're playing the game of how am I doing?
Mm.
You know, how am I comparing?
Mm-hmm.
And they're scorekeepers.
Mm-hmm.
And they're keeping stats. And these people are probably bankers, people who work with numbers, CPAs.
Yep.
I mean, and they're always about the number. They're always about the bottom line. So, you know, when people ask you, and, hey, you know, how you doing? How you doing? You take it and you actually deflect it. You put the onus of responsibility back on the questioner. You go, I'm doing pretty well. I said, I'm playing pretty well. How are you doing? How are you shooting? You deflect it right back. Instead of trying to say, hey, I've got to give you an answer. I've got to tally up my score. Even if they tell you, hey, you know, well, you're two over, you know, you're three behind. You know, what you have to be able to do is, you have to be able to dismiss the good thoughts, the good intentions, and all the speaking of others and kind of just move into your own thing. And that's really what being in your bubble is all about,
mm-hmm.
is that you have to just sort of just let it pass. Instead of thinking la, 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 na, 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 and keep your eyes, you know, and ears closed, you just kind of dismiss it and say, oh, that's good, you know, well, great. And then you just kind of get back into your business.
Yeah.
But that's really where chapter 5, and I've got some very specific, you know, some really nice ones, you know, in this. And I really want to say about the book is I talk about a nice introduction. I talk about, you know, it was great that Rich Lerner had written my introduction for me, the Golf Channel. I've known Rich for a number of years and do a lot of charity work for his family golf tournament.
Oh, that's nice.
And he had written me just an eloquent, you know, introduction. And then I talk about a player I interviewed, Walt Zimbrisky, you know, the iron worker that came from New Jersey, who belongs to my home club, Orange Tree in Orlando, Florida. And we start talking about, you know, that story. And then it goes right into the nine different mistakes that golfers make. And the first mistake that golfers make is, I don't believe in my talent. I worry. I doubt. And that's the first chapter. And the second chapter is, I hit the ball when I know I'm not ready. Chapter 3 is I get ahead of myself. I fail to stay in the present moment. Chapter 4 is I do not commit to my shot or my game plan. Number 5, I care too much about score, results, my reputation. Chapter 6, I worry about what others think about me. Number 7, I expect to play perfect. And number 8, I think too much. And number 9, I lose my composure. So for every one of these chapters, Fred, I give a nice presentation, a describing story. I use a lot of players' interviews, and then I give prescriptions. I give treatments, what we call Dr. Bob's RX for success. And at the very end of every chapter, I compress it almost into like a little zip drive, if you want to use computer technology.
Mm-hmm.
I say, take it to the course. This is what you need to do, because people can say, you can talk to me about confidence and trust all day long. Just tell me what I need to do. And so I'm really big into, okay, this is what you need to do. This is what has worked. It has worked in the past. It is working now, and it will work in the future. And you need to comply with this. And if you do this, you're going to be well on your road to the road of, yes, I can.
It's so consistent with what I've always thought about the difference between men and women. Men are results oriented. Women are process oriented. So when a woman says, "Oh, I'm having such a hard time with," okay, let's plug in golf. I'm having, you know, such a hard time with this, fill in the blank. And the guy will say, well, here's what you need to do, like you have at the end of your chapter. Here's exactly what you need to do. And she looks at you and says, I don't want an answer. I just want you to listen to me. And that's why, they like to talk to their girlfriends, because they just, so I've learned, I'm coming up, I've been married 34 years, and I've learned that when my wife presents a problem that she's having, I've learned instead of giving her an answer, I've learned how to nod a lot and say, oh, oh.
Well, that's really good. That's just good mental management and emotional management right there, Fred.
Thank you.
Yeah, so that's the
how
part of it.
How much do I owe you for the hour, doctor?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the point, you know, and being married, you know, the old thing about men, and I'm making a very gender statement here, is do you want to be happy or do you want to be right? And Dr. Phil, you know, was always talking about that. You know, do you want to be happy? Do you want to be right? But in my book, Mistake-Free Golf, First Aid for Your Golfing Brain, I sort of present both sort of that male-female brain, if you will, because women always ask me, Fred, why? Why are we doing this?
Wow, okay.
So, why is this so? And so I want players to understand, this is why you're having this problem. This is why this has become an issue for you. Now that we answer that question, why, here's why it is, and here's how you need to do it. Here's how you can get through it, and here's how you can prevent it from coming and happening again. So that's sort of really what you were kind of talking about. And that's why so many people say you present the problem, you know, the presenting issue, you describe it, and you give great interviews. And the Michelle Wies, the Suzanne Pedersens, the Nick Prices, the Greg Normans, all the people that, you know, give like these wonderful, you know, little interviews to you. And then you actually sort of kind of go through and elaborate on what they did, what they said. And then here's what we need to do in order to prevent it. And so people have gone through and they say, wow, this is unlike anything I've ever read before. So, you know, we're really happy with it because I took a different approach. Instead of saying, okay, you need to adhere to your routine. I mean, I took a look at here's the negativity. Here's the mistake. Here's the danger zone. All right. So you've cut yourself on the golf course. Here's how you apply the tourniquet. Here's how we actually get better.
Absolutely. Why do I have a sense that these nine chapters are kind of like the front nine and there's going to be a back nine soon to follow?
Well, yes, you know, and I'm just really happy because the book has been receiving 5 stars, you know, from literary sources such as Goodreads.
Oh, congratulations.
Yes, and it's just everyone who reads. It's been, you know, it's been available now through Amazon.com and IndieBound and Barnes & Noble. I mean, you can get it anywhere. It's available all book retailers.
Well, you know what? Here's where you get it is at golfsmarter.com because we do have the book in our Golfer's Mart. We have all of your books in our shopping section.
Right?
Yeah, via Amazon.
Fantastic.
So you can get it for your Kindle or, you know, you can get it for download or you can buy the hard copy. So, yeah, just to remind everybody that this book is available right now in our shop at golfsmarter.com. You don't have to go anywhere else.
Well, absolutely. And
Thank you.
You know, someone asked me the other day, they said, well, what's the greatest mistake, you know, Dr. Winters, that you think is in golf? And I said, well, I mean, I can give you my nine, but I think the 10th one is that you fail. You make the mistake of not buying this book. so I think that's the greatest mental mistake. It is. I mean, I just think, you know, people who have read it, who've come up to me and they go, wow. And I get emails, you know, every day talking about people who've had, they've cut, you know, I mean, they've actually taken 7, 8 shots, you know, off of their score.
Wow.
They've shot their lowest score. They got into a zone-like state where they were playing one after one until I'm done. And I talk about that mantra in a lot of my chapters. But the point of it is that's what people want. They want something that's an easy read, that's simple and very specific. And that's always been my KISS principle. I've never thought about keeping it simple, stupid, because golfers are not stupid people. They're very highly intelligent. They know what works, and they know what works for them and what doesn't. So I've always said KISS means keeping it simple and keeping it specific, having a simple thought and a specific target, and here's what we need to do. So let's go out and let's go do it. And so that's what Mistake-Free Golf has always been about.
Oh, absolutely fabulous. So to wrap this up, I'm just so curious about this. Tell me what some of the people you've been working with and helping out, because we've been seeing some names that we don't recognize necessarily on the winners, winning on the tour, both women and men. How many of these people can you say, yep, I've had some input, I've worked with them?
Well, I mean,
go ahead. Come on.
If people go into the Dr. Bob Winters Golf.com winners list. Every week I have different winners on there. I can tell you one of the young stars that has done great over this past year, and who I've actually taken sort of as a cub and brought him all the way up, you know, was Brooks Koepka, who's just a great talent, you know, from Southern Florida, and who played for Florida State. He's a great talent. It's going to be, you know, working great. Another wonderful talent who just started working with her about 8 months ago is the Korean golfer Hee Young Park. And Hee Young is an absolute fantastic talent. We have, you know, Elise Ceramia, who is a European Tour pro, and Perrine Delacour, who is a French LPGA Tour professional. We've got, you know, so many new up-and-coming ones to go with the people that I've had the pleasure of working with in the past, such as the Justin Roses and the Lee Westwoods and the Michelle Wees. But there's so many new players coming up, and I love my developing tour players. You know,
so
people.
So you have worked with Justin Rose and Michelle Wee, or like
when yes,
you,
yes,
I've never heard some people
yeah,
say
years,
like the
years past.
Yeah. Oh, you have. Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah, years past. Now, you know, I don't work with them, you know, currently, but you know, through the years, through their developing, you know, I've been very lucky to have access, you know, to many of the Ledbetter people to come through the Ledbetter Academy, and you know, people such as the Sandra Gals, the Julieta Granadas, and people such as that, you know, have worked with David, and obviously, you know, being with David, I'm going on my 15th year now being with David. And David's working on some new things, has really sort of been pioneering some new strategies, and it's very exciting, you know, what he's doing. So a lot of things we're doing at Champions Gate is in collaboration, you know, with everything, and it's all sort of interactive. And so it's a mind, body, spirit. It's just a lot of great stuff going on right there. So it's just a lot of new things going on, Fred. But I tell you, the greatest, you know, some of the greatest, what I call success stories have come from some of my young college players who have now come out or going on the tours, the developmental tours, because the whole planet right now, Fred, is a golf tour. Whether you're playing in Singapore or you're playing in El Paso, Texas, or you're playing in Southern California or you're playing in Maine, there's a golf tournament going on somewhere right now where you've got great, talented people playing. And much like tennis did 20, 25, 30 years ago, that's really what golf is. I mean, I've been associating myself now with the Hurricane Junior Golf Tour, the AJGA, and the FCWT, and so I've been doing a lot of work with that, and even the Maple Leaf Junior Golf Tour up in Canada. So we're sort of developing a whole new recruitment of junior golfers who are just actually just, you know, punching through and going to get there into the winner's circle here very soon. And they're starting to come up younger because we have so much competition now and better information, much like the Fred Green Golf Smarter podcast, where golfers can go in and listen to some of the world's best talk about their skill and how they can make golfers better. So I always appreciate being on because it's a real honor to be with you and on your show, and hopefully we've given, you know, the listeners some great information.
Yeah, you have, and I'm flattered that you would include me in that list. Thank you very much, Dr. Bob. It was great to talk to you again. And once again, the book Mistake-Free Golf, First Aid for Your Golfing Brain, is available at golfsmarter.com in our Golfer's Mart. Dr. Bob, wonderful to speak to you. Best of luck in the future, and we look forward to talking to you when your next book comes out.
Thanks, Fred, so much. And like I always tell you, I hope you always find your ball at the bottom of the cup.
As opposed to in the water? Yeah, okay. Okay, so this, your members, we've got a relationship here, so this is just between the two of us, okay? Please? My sense is that Dr. Bob is really good at what he does, but he may be one of the best self-promoters I've ever had the pleasure to speak with. In fact, and please don't tell anybody about this, but after we finished recording, he actually said to me, "The great thing about this book is I wrote this book." I think I was kind of taken aback. I think his point was that he didn't use a ghostwriter or work with a professional writer like so many other people do, but it just sounded so funny to me. Anyway, there's more to Golf Smarter than just this podcast. You know about Golf Smarter TV, right? Have you checked it out? I got a new one coming soon on Game Golf. Keep your eyes open for that. And we are on Facebook and at Twitter, at Golf Smarter, on Twitter, at Golf Smarter, hashtag sound advice. And if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.